I've had dreams that weren't just dreams.
We accept the reality of the world with which we're presented. It's as simple as that.
Billions of people just living out their lives. Oblivious.
They taught you good. Made you believe their world.
What is real? How do you define real? If you're talking about what you can feel, what you can smell, what you can taste and see, then real is simply electrical signals interpreted by your brain.
Planes go up, planes go down. What planes don't do is just vanish off the face of the earth.
We have breaking news. Malaysia Airlines confirms it has lost contact with a plane carrying 227 passengers.
It seems to have vanished into thin air.
What do we tell the family members? What do we tell the media?
What happens next is like a rip in the fabric of reality.
Theories about the missing plane are going viral.
It's possible it was hijacked. We don't know.
This very mysterious and very suspicious cargo.
A pilot's home flight simulator was removed by police.
I have the real evidence. It's there, and you can't deny that.
Never in history have 239 people been declared dead on the basis of mathematics alone.
Some debris has been found.
Who planted there? Who brought the piece there?
Ils se foutent de nous. Ils se moquent de nous.
They are lying from the beginning. They are lying to the whole world.
MH370 is not just an unsolved mass murder. It's potentially an act of war.
How is it possible for an airline to disappear out of thin air?
Someone knows the answer. The question is who?
Hello and welcome to Beyond the Paradigm. I'm your host, Paul Breckell. Welcome back to all my regular listeners. And if you're a new listener and this is the first time you've listened to this podcast, this is a podcast where we tackle all kinds of what are considered fringe topics. I've covered many different topics, including artificial intelligence, COVID-19. We've looked at ancient giants, ancient mysteries, UFOs. And today we've got another fascinating topic in the disappearance of this plane MH370. And for those of you who are a regular listener to the show and follow me, could you do me one small favour, and that is to leave me a 5-star rating wherever you listen to your podcast. I've noticed that the number of followers isn't corresponding to the actual reviews left, and leaving me a review helps with the algorithms and makes this show more visible when people are looking for something to listen to. And if you're really enjoying the show, would you take that extra step and support the show financially, as there are costs incurred to running the show? You can do this by signing up for a regular amount at patreon.com/beyondtheparadigm, and there you will become a member and help support the show. You'll acquire voting rights to vote on what topics you want on the show, and you'll also get a shout out on the air. But if you can't afford a regular monthly amount, you could make a single donation at buymeacoffee.com/beyondthep5. And as usual, I will leave all links in the show description. And also, guys, I'm on Instagram and I'm on Twitter. You can follow me on Instagram at instagram.com/paradigm1979 and twitter.com/paradigm_79. I interact on there, and you could also send me messages, whatever, but I'm very active on Twitter. And I'm also on Instagram, but more so on Twitter. So it'd be much appreciated if you followed me on there. And I also post links to additional content regarding the YouTube channel that I've got. Some of the shorter videos, which are only available on YouTube. Well, today we're going to be discussing a topic with my guest, Ashton Forbes. And this topic is obviously MH370. It's something I've been wanting to talk about for a while. And Ashton Forbes has been investigating the disappearance of this plane for approximately the last 6 months. Ashton is a citizen journalist, and I first came across Ashton while I was on Twitter. We got talking about the disappearance of the plane, and he's done a thorough investigation of this missing plane. And what I would say with regards to this plane is that The thing to keep in mind is that this plane has gone missing and has never been found. Like it said on the pre-intro, planes go up and planes go down, but what planes don't do is vanish. And that's what's happened to this plane. It has vanished. So without further ado, I'm going to go and bring Ashton onto the show, and I'm sure that you will enjoy this episode. Ashton Forbes, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining me.
Yeah, thank you very much for being here. I appreciate it, and I appreciate all your audience for listening today.
Yeah, I'm sure they're going to be really interested in what you've got to say. It's a fascinating topic. Like I mentioned to you off air, obviously, I know what about the plane in 2014 when it was on the mainstream media, and then it sort of disappeared then. But then I watched the documentary on Netflix, and then also seeing you on Twitter, which sort of got me thinking about it again and talking about it with other people. But just for my audience who possibly haven't heard of you, because, you know, not everyone may have done, although obviously you've gained a lot of followers on Twitter since I first spoke to you. I've noticed that you've got way more and you've been on a lot of podcasts. But could you just tell us about sort of your background and then what led you to investigate this missing plane MH370?
Yeah, the whole thing has actually just been kind of an awakening for me. I can call myself a normal guy. My name's Ashton Forbes. I have been a healthcare IT consultant for pretty much my whole career, an analyst, database architect, whatever you want to call it. I'm just somebody who likes to help people out. And healthcare was a field that interested me many years ago because, you know, I think that healthcare in general, especially in the United States where I'm from, is kind of a little bit of a scam and a game that ruins a lot of people's lives. And I got involved in the MH370 investigation when these videos had reemerged on social media back in early August. And I had been kind of following the UFO community on the sidelines as what they would call a lurker for probably about 6 years or so. Since those DOD Navy videos, the ones with the FLIR footage, forward-looking infrared, became declassified, those were the ones that really kind of woke me up to this phenomenon and realized, oh, there's actually something here. I don't know what it is, but there's something here. And since then, I would lurk and watch videos. I've probably seen hundreds, if not thousands, of, you know, little flying lights in the sky and things like that, but nothing that compelled me to such a degree as the MH370 videos did. Primarily because we see two videos from two different angles. One of them is clearly from a drone. You can just, see the nose of the drone, like in the actual footage. And then the other one is one that we've never seen anything like before. But through the investigation, we've come to determine that it is most likely the Sentient Program / SBIRS system, which the Sentient Program is the AI that runs the United States government spy satellites. And the SBIRS program is space-based infrared system, which is a global persistent infrared surveillance network that is scanning the entire world every 10 seconds. Now, these capabilities are classified. Nobody had any idea, even before this investigation. I think we're like the first people to pretty much expose what type of surveillance technology the United States government has. And when you watch these videos right away as well, for most people, you realize these are really, really good if they're fake or they're just real. Like, that's how incredible they are. Debunkers, VFX experts have looked through them. There's not a single discrepancy on any frame. So what I mean by that is, like, nobody made any mistakes, right? If they edited these or created these, there's no errors anywhere in them. Even the debunk attempts have all been prosaic, right? This looks like this, therefore we're just going to throw off the whole thing. But when you look at all the details, you start to realize there's a bunch of details in these videos that are perfectly consistent with theoretical physics, consistent with science and electrical engineering, that I don't know how anyone would ever even think to make them. So that's what got me involved. And I started my own hashtag on Twitter called MH370X, my own organization that I'm the, I guess I call myself the lead investigator. I don't really like fancy titles or anything like that, but it's just a group of people that look at these videos and they want to get to the bottom of it, because we realized early on, if these videos are real, we should be able to authenticate like every aspect of them. And today, I think we'll go over a lot of how we have.
Yeah. I mean, you've definitely done some investigating. I've been looking at some of the stuff, obviously, you put out there, and it's a thorough investigation. I can assure people of that. So I'm just going to jog people's memory. So Malaysian Airlines flight MH370 took off from Kuala Lumpur International Airport at 12:41 a.m. local time on the 8th of March 2014 and it was carrying mainly Chinese passengers with around 38 Malaysians on board also. The Boeing 777's destination was Beijing. 38 minutes after takeoff, the plane stopped communicating with air traffic control. MH370 was tracked for a further hour by a military radar as it flew over the Andaman Sea in the Indian Ocean, and after that, it was never heard from again. Over to you, Ashton.
Now, that's a good breakdown. And I like how you actually pronounced the cities correctly. And a lot of the American podcasters I get that don't have a lot of international experience don't pronounce Kuala Lumpur correctly. The thing that's interesting about the days afterwards, and part of this investigation has been going back, rewatching all the old press conferences, going through all the news, old news articles from the days after this plane went missing. And I'm old enough that I remember very vividly what was going on back then, watching the news every day back then. I was an adult still back then. I was very interested in the case back then, even though I was not a citizen journalist like I call myself now. I've just always found plane crashes and stuff like that to be very interesting because I actually have a fear of flying, even though I've done tons and tons of flying as part of my job. And I remember that there was so much obfuscation around even where this plane even went. Early on, for 5 days, they were searching the South China Sea. And then they just let it spill like, oh, no, we were tracking on military radar. We know it flew back across the whole country and went towards the Straits of Malacca and the Andaman Sea and the Nicobar Islands. And we're like, wait, what? Why have you had 80 planes and boats searching in the South China Sea if you had tracked it on radar? And they go, well, we don't really know if that was really the plane. Like, what do you mean you don't know if that was the plane? How many rogue 777s are there that go off radar, right? And early on, it was like, okay, is it a maintenance issue? Or was there some kind of hijacking? But the hijacking thing didn't make any sense because it's like no terrorists were taking responsibility for it. They couldn't find it crash anywhere. It's not like it flew into any buildings. Keep in mind, most people's mindset was post 9/11 world. They're thinking maybe some people hijacked this and flew into a building or whatever. It wasn't until days later, maybe more than a week later, that they say, oh, yeah, it flew back and went directly to Penang, the closest airport that you would go to in an emergency situation. And at that point, I think, even now, there's narratives out there. And the narrative that most people know is this is, oh, a suicidal pilot that crashed in the South Indian Ocean. There's actually no evidence of suicide whatsoever, like none at all. There's some stories that got thrown out there, and they're all pretty much just lies, like that he was a terrorist or that his wife was leaving him. All this stuff is just complete nonsense. Like, it's actually none of it holds up. Not even this. They found the simulator data that they sent to the FBI, which is weird. Like, hey, why are you sending it to the FBI at all? But when you look at it, you find out and you dig into it, it's just MH150, him practicing that route like 2 days before he was actually planning on flying it from February 2nd to February 4th. And it's just from Kuala Lumpur to Jeddah. And if you think about how this flight would have gone past back across Malaysia and then it's flying into the Andaman Sea, it's vaguely similar, but it's certainly not a planned suicide route, not the planned route that he took in any way, shape, or form. The official story from the actual officials is that there's no evidence there was pilot suicide at all and that they don't know what happened to the plane. And it's weird because people will probably call me a conspiracy theorist, but then the same people that say that it's a suicide thing literally come up with this conspiracy that the Malaysian government is trying to hide the true fact that it was a suicide. Like, why? That doesn't make any sense at all. Why would they care? You know, they would just want to get the truth out. It's not like they're protecting. They go, oh, well, they're trying to save face. What? The story doesn't make any sense either. And then they had to build this whole narrative of, okay, well, the plane goes disappearing. And the real hinge point of the evidence is these Inmarsat pings. So on March 13th, 5 days after this plane goes missing, is when unnamed U.S. sources come out and say, well, they're saying that it went to the South Indian Ocean. And we're going, what? You just said it was in the South China Sea to the east of Malaysia. Then you're telling us we got radar data seeing it go to the Andaman Sea and then to the Nicobar Islands. Now you're saying it's in the South Indian Ocean, thousands of miles away. Like, how is this possible? What's going on here? And even before that, and this is something I'm going to probably report on pretty soon here, Boeing and Rolls-Royce right before that, like the day before that, was a Wall Street Journal article. And they were saying that the engines had shut down properly and it was unlikely for the plane to have flown for another 5 hours. Where if you think about the math there, you're thinking, okay, well, it's going to the South China Sea, then the Andaman Sea, and then the engines are quote unquote shutting down. They had to retract that because all of a sudden this narrative formed of it going to the South Indian Ocean. Now, the problem with this plane crashing in the South Indian Ocean is that 777s don't crash into the ocean without leaving a gigantic debris field. I want your viewers to go Google how big a 777 is. It's basically the size of a city block. They can hold 300 people on them. If this plane crashes into the ocean anywhere, it doesn't matter, like the ocean's big. Yeah, debris fields from a 777 are thousands of pieces. They're covering miles. We've shown that the United States government has a global persistent monitoring system called SBIRS that's scanning the entire globe all the time, every 10 seconds. There's no way they wouldn't have seen it. The radars, there should have been at least four countries that picked it up on radar. Thailand, Indonesia, even India in the Nicobar Islands has bases there as well. And Australia has this JORN system. And there's three really advanced military bases. In the Koko Islands, there's a signals intelligence base. This plane would have flown right past them. Diego Garcia's United States base that potentially has radar capability to track the plane from takeoff to wherever it went. And the Pine Gap in Australia has a very advanced base as well. There's no way in heck that this plane didn't get seen. They also found no black boxes. They end up looking at these Inmarsat pings, these satellite pings from this company, and they say, oh, well, it must have crashed in the South Indian Ocean. Here are these pings. We know we can track where it went along this arc. They search all along the arc, no debris field. They even use submarines to search underneath the water, find nothing. Not even one piece of the plane is found, right? Totally impossible. No black boxes get found either. And then, like 6 months ago, we have the Titan sub implode, the one that was out by the Titanic. This is a tiny sub. The Navy lies about it for 5 days. They let these oxygen counters run down on all the American cable news. Oh, they've got 48 hours of oxygen left, blah, blah, blah. Now, 5 days later, the Navy goes, yeah, we heard it pop the moment it happened. We didn't say anything about it, and we know exactly where it is. We've got it pinpointed. It's like, wait, how did you know that? Oh, it turns out there's something called the SOSIS system. They've got these hydrophone detectors all throughout the entire ocean, and they can literally pinpoint a tiny sub imploding in its exact location. Okay, so how exactly did they not detect a 777 crashing into the ocean then? Impossible, right? So we've got like 4 points of data that should have isolated the exact location of the crash. Nothing at all, right? And then I know what people are thinking out there. Well, Ashton, what about the debris that washed up on the Reunion Island, right? I heard there was some debris that washed up. Some guy named Blaine Gibson finds it. First of all, that guy is not connected to the official search at all. The official search found nothing. And it was the most expensive and extensive search in history that searched with over 80 boats and planes from over a dozen different countries. They find nothing. The amount of pieces that have been connected to the plane from what that guy found is three. Three total pieces. Okay. And only one of them was even used a serial number to connect it to the plane. And the media just straight up lies to people and they don't tell them that it was a part number, not an actual unique serial identification that would have tied it directly to MH370. The actual serial plate that should have been on the flapper on was missing. They claim it washed off, even though it was like bolted onto the piece there. So could it be debris from MH370? I think it absolutely could. The scenario that I'm going to present uses more evidence than any story out there by far, and it doesn't have to rule out those tiny few pieces of debris that are out there. I just want you to keep in mind, even if you go look at the CNN image, it says the debris that was found and the three pieces that are confirmed, we're talking far less than even 1% of the plane. They found basically nothing out there.
Yeah, it seems to be a common theme with planes crashing, but no parts, like the Pentagon. And was there a field in Pennsylvania? I remember seeing that on the news, and I'm looking, I'm thinking, there's a plane crash there. Where is it? It's like nothing there. But so obviously, you mentioned earlier on about these videos. And for those people that don't know, there's on Ashton's Twitter, he's pinned them to his page. There's some videos, which were originally posted, was it on Reddit, I believe, by someone called Regicide Anon. You need to have a look at these videos, guys, if you're not familiar with them. I've watched them numerous times. But when the first time you saw these videos, what did you think?
Yeah, and just to correct, so I've got the something called my all evidence list, which is pinned to my profile, at least if you're watching right now. I don't know if I've changed it by the time you're listening, but it is out there on my Twitter where you can see the original links that go back on the YouTube Wayback Machine archive. The Regicide Anon account has been deleted for, I don't know, several years. But these have been archived back to 2014, just weeks after the plane went missing. The Regicide Anon video says received March 12th, 2014. That's 4 days after the plane went missing. It was published on May 19th, 2014, roughly 72 days after the plane went missing. So there's a very, very narrow window of time for these videos to have been fabricated, especially given all the obfuscation that we just discussed right there. How would somebody have come up with this? Unless in my mind, it was the US government that somehow, you know, psyoped these videos or whatever. I can't rule that out. It just seems completely inexplicable. And then again, so the working theory is that Regicide Anon was the one who was given these videos from a leaker who potentially would have been a US military personnel. And maybe not even been directly given them, but could have posted it on like a forum somewhere where these people found it. We think that Regicide Anon is from South America, because a lot of the accounts that posted these videos early on were in Spanish. So we think that, you know, it wasn't, there was like kind of an indirect giving this information out there. They probably thought, oh, well, the media is going to blow this up. They're going to realize it has to be MH370. There's literal coordinates in the satellite video that correlate to the Nicobar Islands at the exact location and time where the plane was actually there. So it was a lot of weird details related to them. And sorry, what was your question related to the videos then? I apologize.
When you first saw the videos, what did you think?
Yeah, so first of all, I was skeptical right away. I think anyone's probably going to be extremely skeptical about what they see in these videos, because just as a brief description, we're seeing three orbs come around the plane in a 120-degree equilateral triangle, a sinusoidal pattern. We've actually mapped the rotation of the orbs, and they're circling the plane in a sphere. And it is a sinusoidal pattern, which is a wave pattern, perfect wave pattern. And then after about 30 seconds, poof, the plane just disappears. Doesn't explode, doesn't implode. It's just not there anymore. And the orbs aren't there anymore either. So when you see that, you go, this is impossible. There's no way that this can happen. And I think that if there were not orbs and this endothermic event that we see in two different videos from two different angles, no one would have a problem with believing that that's the plane. It's obviously the plane. It's a 777-200. It's circling on descent, consistent with the actual real capabilities of a 777-200. We've got a drone video from a horizontal view, and we've got a view from the sky, which looks like a Google Video Earth playback. From what presumes to be a satellite from the Sibir system. And so you think, okay, well, this can't be real. But then you start digging into it and digging into the science, and you realize this is actually consistent with something called the Al-Kubari drive, a warp drive. We're not talking Star Trek teleportation, like beam me down. We're talking about Star Trek warp drive, like the ability to go, okay, we're going to go warp 7, warp 9, right? And we're going to move faster than the speed of light. Now, what I'll say too is that it's also potentially consistent with annihilation event. If there's some way for this event to create antimatter, which is what would be needed in order for this plane to like literally just disappear. But if it's not antimatter related, then if this was some kind of explosion, implosion, the amount of energy released from a 777-200 is a huge, huge plane, would destroy part of the planet. So we don't see this giant, you know, mushroom cloud explosion. We just see the zap and then it's just gone. It could also theoretically be cloaking, but the problem with cloaking is that in both videos, we see this smoke trail behind it. And a lot of people, especially debunkers early on, went, well, that's contrails, and the contrails don't look right. But we realized right away that we're looking at cumulus clouds in the background of these videos. And cumulus clouds only form at very low altitudes. Contrails only form at very high altitudes. So we can't be seeing contrails behind the plane. It's got to be either exhaust or smoke. And when this plane disappears, this smoke trail behind them stops entirely. If this was some kind of advanced cloaking, we would at least see this smoke trail going, and then you just wouldn't see the plane anymore. Like if it was some kind of a electromagnetic jamming, spoofing kind of mechanism, but we don't see that. So I wish it was something easier to sell to people, because the reality is I'm not somebody who was really deep into conspiracies or UFOlogy, and I was completely ignorant of what advanced science could look like even 6 months ago. And now I'm sitting here and doing over 60 podcasts talking about how the US government, potentially third-party defense contractors like Lockheed Martin, maybe Northrop Grumman, Boeing, Bigelow, Battelle Institute, to have technology that is we would consider to be magic, that's so far advanced that most people can't even comprehend it to be real.
I had an interview with a gentleman called Dr. Michael Lake. He's an ex-US Army intelligence officer. He's a Christian man now. He's a researcher, biblical scholar. And one of his ex-pupils was in the military. And he got a call from him when he was in Iraq, and he was sat on Saddam Hussein's throne, and he was proceeded to tell him that they'd located a Stargate. And he described it, and he said that the console that was underneath this thing was like, well, he just said it was a spaceship. That's what it looked like. So I know there's advanced technology out there. I mean, the governments around the world, I've said this before on my show, like Raiders of the Lost Ark is like pretty much what's going on. They're going around these and trying to find ancient technology that is more advanced. So, I mean, I've no doubt that, you know, there's something going on here with regards to advanced technology. But with regards to the plane, so we see this zap and it disappears. What do you think's happened to it? What's your thoughts on actually what's taken place and like where it's gone?
Yeah, and I guess that this is a good point to say as well. A couple things. First is that I'm not trying to tell anybody to believe the stuff that I'm saying. I mean, I probably wouldn't have believed myself a year ago, right? But look at the evidence, because the evidence is overwhelming. I also want to say that we should give our condolences to the families here, because regardless of whatever happened to this plane, their family members appear to be gone. You know, it's 10 years later. I've got on good authority that many of them have moved on, remarried, and stuff like that. So even if, you know, I think that the idea that these people could still be around is very, very low likelihood. So what do we think happened to the plane? First thing is that we think when this plane went dark over the South China Sea that there was a fire. We found out that the Malaysian Airlines CEO lied, that's claiming there was no dangerous cargo on board until March 20th, almost 2 weeks after the plane went missing. Then they went, oh, just kidding. There's 221 kilograms of dangerous lithium ion batteries that didn't go through two different screenings that they should have gone through. Oh, and two pallets of them are in the forward cargo bay directly next to the main equipment center, also known as the electronics bay, which is like, okay, wait, what? You didn't want to mention that? You didn't think that might be important? You didn't think that could be why, you know, some guy in an oil rig sees the plane on fire at the exact location and time where the plane goes dark, and why nine people on the coast hear loud noises at the exact same time, and why eight fishermen 10 minutes later see the plane flying really low? Because if there was an explosion on board, they've got to fly low because the plane maybe is depressurized and you're trying to put out the fire while simultaneously giving enough oxygen for the people to be able to breathe. You know, and then you're going back to the closest airport where you can land a 777, which is Penang. They fly directly over it. Now, for whatever reason, they don't land there, but we know they're flying low enough for the co-pilot's cell phone to ping a cell tower in the station, which means they were below probably 7,000 feet. I mean, you guys can fly on a plane, you'll know that even if you leave your phone on, which you're not supposed to do, you very quickly don't have cell phone capability. Now, we don't know why they didn't land there. There's several possible reasons. Most of them boil down to it not being safe, especially if you're on fire or if your landing gear doesn't work or if you're too afraid to dump the fuel because you have an actual fire on board and you don't want the plane to explode. They go to the Andaman Sea. Now, it turns out there's these Cope Tiger and Cobra Gold exercises going on right during that period of time of February 2014 to March 2014 between Thailand and the United States. So they've got the most advanced equipment there in that bay, in that Andaman Sea area there. And I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, yes. And the Cope Tiger exercises, the theme that year was actually search and rescue, funny enough. So this plane is flying directly towards those exercises. And those should have also detected the plane as well. Now, there's a last witness, Catherine T, who sees this plane at roughly 1840 UTC. Now, she's on a boat, so they've used automatic GPS to try to recreate her position, the sighting, and the direction of travel from the plane is consistent with MH370. There's no way that she couldn't have seen it. Everybody, even all the experts, agreed the plane went right over her. She sees a glowing orange plane with no navigation lights flying very low, and she sees it descending during the sight time of her duration of her sighting. She gets back to Phuket, which is where she was going to on the boat. She puts in an official report. She ends up talking to all the official investigators, whatever. They all just discount her sighting. They don't give you any logical reason other than they just, it doesn't fit with their theories, so they just completely disregard her. We're able to find out that the reason why the plane's glowing orange is because the Halon 1301 fire extinguishing gas in these on these airplanes has bromine in it, which is a halogen gas. So presumably there was some chemical reaction that's releasing bromine, this halogen gas, for about 1 hour to 1 hour and 20 minutes from the point where the plane goes dark and they're battling this fire. And that people say, well, the plane can't last. It can, actually. It turns out those halogen fire extinguishing devices can last for up to 4 hours, 3 to 4 hours, We only need it to last for an hour and 20 minutes. It's releasing bromine, causing the plane to glow orange from her sighting. And then there's also a Mayday call that is only, that's intercepted from the Thailand embassy by China, only reported in Chinese news at 2:43 a.m., which is 18:43 UTC, within 3 minutes of KT's sighting, that said that the plane was disintegrating and attempting an emergency landing, which is now consistent with 19 witnesses and two videos that we're looking at. Because when we look at the videos, we are seeing the plane turning, where it's maxing out the turn capabilities of a 777-200 while in descent. And like I mentioned before, we're looking at cumulus clouds. So we know this plane is actually low as well. So now we have a Mayday call. We have a literal witness at the location that the coordinates in the video actually indicate, and two simultaneous perfect synchronized videos, both showing the same event. So what's happening to this plane? If it's being teleported, I've talked to engineers and physicists. One of them is Salvatore Pius, who has these, they call them UFO patents. It's not really what they are, but if you were to kind of add them together, they do give you a transmedium craft that's capable of superluminal speeds. I've talked to Bob Greenier, who works in low energy nuclear reactions. I've talked to Dave Rossi, who is a DOD contractor and engineer. And the best explanation I can get right now is there's a fourth orb. So we've got three orbs circling around our plane, and then we've got a fourth orb somewhere else. And if you were to imagine quantum entanglement, the double slit experiment, you would entangle the orbs together. So you've got your three orbs circling the plane, you've got your other orbs somewhere else, and you're pulling them apart. And then at the point of convergence, when the orbs kind of converge on the plane, you are inducing the singularity that goes, and they slingshot over to the fourth orb. So that's actually why people have been calling me Ashton Four Orbs right now, even though my last name is Forbes, because we've been promoting this idea that you need some way to determine where the plane goes. Now, we don't have two videos on the other side, so I can't tell you with any amount of certainty exactly where this plane went. But what we can say, there is more evidence. There was 20 islanders in the Maldives that saw this plane flying from west to south in the early morning hours, headed towards Diego Garcia military base. This is the military base where basically every conspiracy theory that I've dug up says that this is where the plane went. Famous French author Marc Duguesne said that this is where the plane went. There was a picture that was taken that was posted on 4chan that it was just a black picture, but it comes with it one of the passengers, Philip Wood, one of the American adult passengers, actually the only American adult passenger, that said he was being held prisoner somewhere, that he felt like he was drugged and couldn't think clearly. And when you look at the EXIF data on this picture, it points at Diego Garcia. It's got coordinates to point to Diego Garcia. So I know this doesn't really make a lot of sense. Why would you post a 4chan? Supposedly he did the prison style thing and hid the phone up his butt or whatever. But there is circumstantial evidence that somehow this plane got to Diego Garcia.
Well, I was going to ask you that actually about Diego Garcia. I'm glad you mentioned it. But I mean, quantum entanglement obviously is mind blowing. And it's a great hypothesis actually. When you was describing it, I was like, I can see that that's a possibility. I mean, because I look into quantum physics and it's one of them things where if you say you understand it, you clearly don't understand it. But obviously the evidence is pointing towards it's gone to Diego Garcia. Obviously, there's been eyewitnesses. I mean, you mentioned the girl on the boat. Is that the English girl?
Yeah. I've actually reached out to her early on as well, got in touch with her. I did a phone call interview with her. I didn't record it, but I took notes and wrote my questions down. It was mostly to corroborate the stuff that she saw to see, you know, did she still corroborate her sighting from, you know, 9 years prior? I'd already saw all her blog posts and I'd reported on them on my Twitter account. And a couple of things were pretty illuminating. One was that she told me she felt pressured by the experts to change the time of her sighting. And I went, what? Because I asked her what time the sighting was. At this point, we had already locked in thinking that 1840 UTC was the time that the satellites were there in the right location looking down. And she says her time was 1840. And I was like, okay, wow. And then, you know, she tells me a thing about the experts pressuring her, which I was already skeptical at that point of all this Inmarsat data and this whisper report out there. And early on, I just want to say as well that I thought all that stuff had to be real and true. And I started to realize the only difference between this plane being on fire and these videos being real is 10 rows on an Excel spreadsheet. And I'm just sitting there thinking that is either really easy to fake, or it could very easily be misinterpreted. These experts that looked at this made up their own unique, novel way of interpreting this data. And this is how we came to the South Indian Ocean narrative. So I talked to Kate T. One of the other big things I asked her about was, I was trying to get her to look at my investigation and stuff, because I was hoping that she would have like seen the plane disappear and just didn't want to say anything to anybody, because like, how do you tell people that, right? But she told me that she did not see it disappear, that she went inside the boat in the middle of this sighting of this orange plane descending. And then when she came back out, the plane was gone. And that all she saw was this dome-like halo, and that it was like the size of an oil rig, an orange dome halo. And so she just assumed that the plane must have flown off or something like that. She didn't see any orbs or anything like that circling the plane. She said she didn't. But the other thing is, I said, well, I show her a picture of the thermal. So we've got, I think it's actually my background on my Twitter page, which is the thermal overlaid over the actual plane taking off. And it's just a perfect lined up match, like actually perfect. And I show her that picture and I go, is this what you saw? And she goes, well, it wasn't green, it was orange. And I laughed because she didn't even know that I was talking about the thermal video. She'd obviously never seen the video at all, right? Otherwise she'd know we're looking at a thermal video, that's why it's green in the thermal. And so I explained that to her. And that's also when I realized that she wasn't clearly following the case or my stuff as well, which I liked, because that meant her view wasn't tainted in any way, right? And I said, well, what about the shape? And she's like, oh no, the shape is the match. And I'm like, okay, bingo. I mean, there's no way she did not see MH370. That was clearly the plane that she saw. And the reason why the experts have to ignore her and pretend like she doesn't exist is because she tells the story of a fire event. And if there is a fire event, this plane's not lasting 6 more hours to fuel exhaustion. Those fire extinguishing devices only last a couple more hours after that at best, right? And most of these experts out there, and I'm using air quotes because one thing I've learned here is that expert means absolutely nothing at all out there. People's letters after their names mean nothing. It's the evidence that you put forth and the story that you tell that determines whether or not you're credible, not whether or not you went to some school or whatever, or you call yourself an expert. And that's why I don't call myself one generally. And so they have to discredit her, because if she saw the plane there, she saw it descending. She's got, you know, this fire scenario is consistent with all the other witnesses, consistent with this Chinese only report of the plane disintegrating and attempting emergency landing. And in her sighting, she also sees it flying low. They've estimated about 10,000 feet, and that it's descending during the course of her 5 to 10 minute sighting. This is not consistent with the plane flying out to the South Indian Ocean, where they're saying it's at cruising altitude and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So she just completely blows a hole directly in this Inmarsat data, and generally most people's belief this plane somehow was a suicidal pilot flying in the South Indian Ocean.
Did she mention whether she felt like threatened at all?
Good question. So I did ask her about that. She told me she hadn't got any overt threats or anything like that. I mean, I was scared for her. And honestly, to this point, people ask me, well, why have you not tried to keep in touch with her or stuff like that? Because I don't want her to be in any kind of danger. If these videos are real, then she's literally one of the only witnesses that saw the plane, maybe one of the people that last saw it on the face of this earth that's a public-facing person. And I would not want any danger or anything to happen to her. I'm much happier to take all that fear, all the, and also people would try to discredit her, right? They're going to dig through her whole past, try to discredit her. And I'd rather those people focus on me and focus that negative attention on me than on anybody else. So that's the reason why I didn't need anything else more from her anyway after that, you know? So, one thing I will say is that, and I hope this doesn't get her in trouble or anything like that, but that there was somebody else in the boat that may have also been a witness that did not want to come forward regarding any of this stuff for their own personal reasons, which I won't go into. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think people were generally afraid, because you get to a point where you saw something and you've got all these experts trying to tell a different story, and they're on CNN and all these other cable news stations, and you start to wonder, like, Okay, these people are saying the story does not corroborate with me literally seeing the plane, you know, and you just don't want to get in trouble. Like a lot of people are averse to that kind of negative attention.
Yeah, the use of experts, you know, the appeal to authority, it's a fallacy because you can be an expert, so-called, with all these letters after your name, but that doesn't mean that you're an honest person and you're telling the truth. So, like you said, you've got to look at the actual evidence, and it doesn't matter what, whether you've got letters after your name or not. But so clearly then there's been like a thermal incident on this plane. And clearly, to me, I can see they've used some kind of advanced technology. Why do you think they've used advanced technology in this situation to what seems to be maybe rescue this plane?
So get ready for this. This is going to get wild. So my first impression was, okay, plane's on fire. Once I figured out the plane was on fire, I'm going, this has got to be a rescue operation. And actually, everything starts to line up because they're filming this plane before these orbs even show up. The drone can't keep up with the plane. It had to have intercepted it. And you're like, okay, this is they intercepted in the Andaman Sea because you got the Cope Tiger exercises going on. That's where the assets are. They're operationalizing the satellite system to look down on it and track it. You know, they've got an hour to do so. There's enough time to pull that all off. I'm thinking, okay, they must have rescued it. And then I've got all my conspiracy followers going, the military would never do that. They're never going to try to save these people, whatever. And we dig into the passengers and we find out that there's 20 free-scale semiconductor scientists on board. This company gets sold off the next year to another company. We've been able to connect this company potentially directly to the technology that we see in the videos. That's how wild the investigation has been. I never thought we'd find something like that. There's 20 scientists and engineers on board this plane. Eight of them are Chinese, 12 of them are Malaysian. And we have found that the company is tied to both United States Aerospace and Defense through serving RF power needs, as well as a 2005 National Security Agency report on the commercial emergence of room temperature superconductive microchips. Freescale Semiconductors is listed in this report 9 different times. Like most of the reports just like about them and the company they broke off of, which is Motorola back in 2004, the year before this report came out. You can find this report online. Public everything that we've been revealing is publicly available information, believe it or not. So my whole theory was, okay, they are trying to rescue these people who are their intellectual property, right? Otherwise, they're just going to let this plane crash. Everybody's going to die. Even if this plane tries to land in the ocean, it's going to rip apart and probably nobody lives. That's just the sad state of it. And the other sad state is that because of the fire, because of the potential depressurization, I don't know if people know this, but the masks on board the airplanes only last like 30 minutes at most. We've got this plane flying for 1 hour and 20 minutes. You've got it spewing toxic lithium ion battery smoke as well. It's not looking good for the passengers already, let alone, I know that people are thinking, can people survive this teleportation event? We really don't know. We're not sure. I would hope that this is proven technology that they know can work, but this is 2014. To have proven teleportation technology in 2014, that means they must have been trying it out for decades before that, probably, right? But then here's the other crazy part is I want to say 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, a YouTube channel gets created. And I had been reporting, I went on Tim Pool podcast, and the same morning I was going on Tim Pool, this Miami Aliens thing comes up where there's like 100 cop cars on like the day after New Year's or something like that in Miami. And everyone's wondering why there's so many cop cars. And these stories start coming about somebody saw some interdimensional aliens or whatever. And so I post about it, ends up getting like 10 million views. And it wasn't like this main thing that I was on. I just saw people reporting on it. I figured I'm gonna post about it, and it got huge. And so this YouTube channel gets created like a couple of days after, and it turns out that was, as far as I know, a big hoax. Like the people were just kind of these TikTokers were trying to make up fake stories to build clout based on this kind of internet phenomenon that was happening. And then this YouTube account makes like three things about like stories related to the Miami alien stuff. But then the video drops. It's called Diego Garcia Whistleblower, A Letter to Ashton Forbes. And I had somebody like it posts, I think, on January 9th. The account was made on January 7th. The first three videos were these really fake Miami aliens accounts, right? That were not very great or creative. And the letter to Ashton Forbes is just creepy as hell. Creepiest thing that's ever happened to me in my entire life. 11-minute long letter. It's not, if it's AI generated, it would have had to use a lot of prompts. Like somebody had to write a whole script for it. Somebody even tried to say how easy it was and make one using AI. And it's the AI made one is like terrible, right? Because you can tell like how AI structures stuff and things like that. This had a lot of personal stuff in it. It was even admonishing me for reporting on the Miami aliens thing. Now, the key parts of it is that it presents a whole like kind of like a branching scenario to what I had been proposing, which is that what happened to the plane was espionage, and that those eight Freescale semiconductor scientists were defecting to China with the technology. And the United States government apparently knew about it in December. This plane went missing in March, and they let the plan go, and that they loaded the plane with the batteries with a predictable burn rate so that it would be this big show to show China, like, we knew what you did. We're just going to destroy your plan, like, and watch it literally burn up in smoke. And that this diversion that happens is all planned, that the reason why the plane is going there is because this is all a big planned event, and that they teleport the plane right in front of the Chinese and they let them watch. And this is all weird because there's a lot of elements to this were things that I had never reported on, knew about. They even dropped times. Like they even say that they disappeared the plane 2 hours and 13 minutes after it took off. And like the time that you just posted, 16:30, 12:30 a.m. You know, if you look at that time and convert it to add to 2 hours and 13 minutes, that's 18:43 UTC. That's within 3 minutes of the time that we had proposed the videos took place. And I had never reported 18:43 being the time. It also turns out to be the Chinese Mayday call time as well. And it even has a time for when the supposedly they received the plane, which I believe was 18:56, 13 minutes later. So it's got all these weird elements that have never been reported on by me, included in this story that presents the espionage scenario. And I had kind of discounted it. I said, okay, it could be espionage, but it seems really complicated for it. But now this story comes along in this 13-minute, and it's an AI voice for sure. Don't get me wrong. It's AI voice, but somebody wrote a letter. And if they faked it, they did a really scary good job. Because then at the end, too, they want me to find the gray bearded man that was on Joe Rogan. And I had never heard of this guy. Turns out his name is Randall Carlson. He's into sacred geometry. And he knows a guy named Malcolm Bendall, who was working on plasmoid tech in the Maldives for 7 years. And I find out that Malcolm Bendall knows Bob Greenier, who was on one of my podcasts, one of the scientists I had been talking to. So I'm just like, what is happening? My head's spinning. I'm like, this is so bizarre. I didn't know who these people were. Now this person wrote me his letters telling me this whole story about espionage that I hadn't been promoting, telling me to go find this person that is supposedly the key to the technology that's being used, at least like the base level of it, and how it can be used for teleportation. And the end is probably the scariest, which is, you know, they go, hi, Ashton, impressive. And then they kind of give me a warning saying, how do you stop somebody who has, and I'm paraphrasing, you know, unlimited power and complete control over the media that can craft a perception of events that, you know, in whatever favor they want? And they say, you talk about them and you don't stop talking. And that's how the letter ends. And I probably listened to it 30, 35 times. And the thing is, it doesn't really scare me because it feels like it's something meant to encourage me to keep investigating. But it's creepy in the level of detail in it. So the only thing I can come up with is this letter is either a super fan who's been following every aspect of the case, has their own theories, and somehow knows Malcolm Bendall and Randall Carlson and knows all about them and their theories as well, and mixed it all together because they are just like some kind of crazy super fan. Or this is some kind of psyop, like either a foreign intelligence agency or even the US government. Could be malevolent, no idea. But either way, it's a crazy story. And it's a fun one to tell because craziest things that ever happened to me in my entire life, by far. I don't think I'm gonna get many more YouTube random channels that show up and send me letters. And then it did like two more different little stories that were like kind of maybe tangential. One of them had another message like follow-up, because a lot of people were like arguing about how it could have been made and stuff like that. And they kind of answer a couple of questions saying that they used Google Translate and Grammarly, and we're pretty sure they used a voice translator. And then after that, the whole channel just went dark. And the last 2 weeks, it hasn't posted a single thing. And I'm just going, well, if that was a hoax, it's a pretty darn good one. So
Wow.
there you go. A little story for your followers. I hope
Whoa.
they enjoyed
Creepy
that.
that. I mean, this investigation has clearly changed your life, hasn't it? You know, it's I mean, one of the things is definitely like to look out for is these security assets. You know, you've got people out over there. I mean, one name springs to mind. Is it Lou Elizondo? I mean, he's a spook.
Oh, 100%,
One of the
he's a
things
spook.
he keeps saying is, you know, I mean, he's being used to sort of promote this fake alien invasion that's they're going to bring about. You know, you've got Project Bluebeam and all that. I mean, and these are the people you've got to look out for, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, do you feel threatened, or have you been threatened directly, other than like that creepy message that you've had through a YouTube channel? Have you had any kind of veiled threats from anywhere else?
I haven't had any veiled direct threats at me. What I'll say is that yes, A has obviously changed my life pretty significantly. I think for the better. I've met people that I would have never met my whole life that I think are just amazing people. I couldn't be more appreciative. I think it's also a good time to say that I would never hurt myself in any way, shape, or form. I'm definitely not going to be dying suddenly, and I'm not going to be doing any, dangerous sports or rock climbing or going up Everest or anything like that either. Just for the record. Just in case, right? Lou Elizondo is definitely a spook, 100%. I will say that the amount of attacks and personal attacks and people who have tried to dox my life and what have you is very, very bizarre. It does not feel organic in any way, shape, or form. It feels very, very coordinated from a specific group of people, especially on Twitter, that are actually directly tied to Lou Elizondo. They actually call themselves the Lou Crew. I call them the Luanons because it's kind of like it's a literal cult, kind of like the fake QAnon stuff, but it's like in actual real manifest form. And it wouldn't surprise me if he's like directing them behind the scenes. I think that a lot of the disinformation stuff is that a lot of people are willing to do it just because they want a purpose in life. And then people like Lou Elizondo, it's a slow drip disclosure process, right? Where what I've kind of learned about this and my own kind of understanding of this technology potentially being real is that it's not even so much about proving the technology is real. It's about convincing, opening people's minds to the nature of our reality. And it goes back again to the double slit experiment, this idea that we live in a construct, that there is an underlying framework to the construct, because that's what you need in order to be able to teleport a plane and do all this other advanced quantum mechanics science at the macro scale level. You know, if what we're in is a matrix where our reality is being projected onto it. Well, now if you break through the initial reality, now you can get to the underlying code. And this is like being in a video game where you turn on the cheat functions, right? Now you can start to do stuff that what otherwise we would think to be impossible. And I think that that's the purpose of people like Lou Elizondo out there, which is the government has a very specific plan probably to slowly acclimate people to this idea because they don't want people's minds to break. They don't want major upheaval when it comes to socioeconomic stuff, like the use of fossil fuels, like all these industries that would just get wiped out overnight, right? And they want to slowly reveal information, slowly reveal the science and the technology as well. And I've been told by basically everybody that they're censoring the science, they're suppressing the science. Papers get forced to be retracted, patents get forced to be taken back, and that they don't overtly kill people, although they probably will in an emergency situation, but that they discredit people. And I mean, I think that people out there will listen. It's very, very easy to discredit people. You know, you call people crazy, you call them a quack, you ask for the source. Where's the source? Where's the scientific paper? Blah, blah, blah. Well, they suppress that. They get rid of all that stuff, right? They make it so that it's not possible. They're not going to wheel out the crafts that can float and stuff like that, right? And that's why you've got these people that all have NDAs, even David Grush. And I have nothing against these people like Lou Elizondo, David Grush, or the Corbells, Chris Mellons, whatever. Even if they do have this slow disclosure plan, my guess is that everybody in their own mind thinks that what they're doing is noble, right? That there's a good reason for it. And in my mind, I almost agree with them, is that you look at this technology, and it's very easy to imagine this technology being used as a weapon. And not just a weapon like nuclear bombs. We're talking about world-ending doomsday weapons, like destroying the whole planet kind of weapons, right? And not just that it can destroy the planet, but like destroy the planet with a push of a button. Like if you were to take like an ISIS terrorist and you were to say, okay, don't press that red button or the planet, it gets destroyed. How long are we going to last, right? Even the letter to me mentions this, that this technology is essentially unlimited power. And if two warring factions were to get a hold of it, the planet wouldn't last a day, right? And that's the scary part about it. Now, if you look at it from that perspective, you might go, okay, it is kind of noble to actually hide this technology in that sense. But on the other side of it, you go, look at how many people are suffering on this planet, people that have nothing at all. The United States alone has 650,000 homeless people on it, that if we have free energy, we can change all of their circumstances, let alone all the other people on the rest of the planet, right? And I think that it's our will, whether or not we destroy ourselves or we enter a new age of prosperity, it's up to us to make that determination, right? Not some people behind closed doors and suits who determine what our fate is. So in it, the last thing I'll say on it is that if that wasn't MH370 in those videos, families that were lied to, pilots that were falsely vilified as terrorists and suiciders and whatever, the witnesses that all get discredited, some of them even had their whole lives destroyed, like Mike McKay, completely destroyed his whole life. They just tried to vilify him as much as possible. And potentially the leaker that leaked these videos, who we think went to prison for 6 years over it. If it wasn't for that plane being on those videos, I probably would let it go as well. But the reality is that we lied to the world about this and vilified all those people, and they deserve vindication. They deserve the truth. So if that means that this technology's got to come out as well, then you know what? I'm not the one who messed up. It's the US government when they're filming it on two cameras.
So you fully believe that the US government has in its possession advanced technology of non-human origin?
Well, when it comes to non-human origin, I can't say with certainty. My opinion is it's probably got to be reverse engineered. It's really hard for me to imagine that we're just this secretly advanced. Like I early on in the investigation, the first couple of weeks, I was thinking this is aliens or something, alien tech that's like thousands of years more advanced than us. But as I dug into the investigation more and more, as I looked at like the intent behind what was happening, the fire scenario, the fact that they're filming ahead of time, that's when I started to realize, no, this is an operation. And then I started putting the pieces together, learning about Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, Boeing, Bigelow Aerospace, all these companies. I realized, like all these UFO people are saying they have whatever crafts that can hover. And I'm going, well, maybe we did reverse engineer them, right? It's not like we've been doing nothing since the 40s. Or maybe we just, you know, after we figured out how to split the atom in the 40s and make nukes, maybe we did come across this. Maybe what we really need is a unification theory of quantum mechanics and general relativity, which is things that are very small and things that are very big. And if you have a unification theory between these two things that brings them together, now you have the ability to quantum teleport something at the macro scale level. And that's what enables really all of this. So the more I've dug into the science, the more I've realized, like, okay, this isn't 1,000 years more advanced. It's 50 to 100 years more advanced, but it's possible for us to have figured this out. Now, to your point, it could come from ancient technology that was lost, right? I think a lot of people, there's a lot of connections to ancient civilizations, even things like how did they build the pyramids? You know, maybe there were previous civilizations that maybe they didn't have computers, but maybe they understood stuff like, you know, the unification of quantum field theory and general relativity better than we do now, right? And if we understand, we find stuff like that, that can give us a boost, right? And at the end of the day, then this becomes about national security, right? And why are they hiding this? Well, because whoever controls this technology controls the world. Like, and this would also explain why the United States has gone kind of uncontested for the last 80 years as well, is that, sure, you have these proxy wars, Ukraine, Israel, Palestine, but any real war with this kind of weaponry, this kind of technology, you end the war in a day, right? So it turns these other wars into little sideshows about money, which I don't think anyone would have any hard time believing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, obviously there's a talk of ETs, and like I said to you off air, I don't believe in, well, actually, there is such a thing as extraterrestrial, because all that means is that they're not from Earth. Mm-hmm. But as far as little green men from other planets, that's definitely not true. And if you actually look into a lot of these, well, NASA, for example, And the men behind that, like Wernher von Braun, obviously a Nazi, they was heavily into the occult. And any of these who develop advanced technologies, if you look into their background, there's always occultic practices surrounding them. So that gives you the indication that they are in contact with non-human intelligence. And like my audience are familiar with Genesis chapter 6, where there was an exchange of between fallen angels, what we call angels, but you could call them extraterrestrials. Angel, like I said to you, is just like a job title anyway. In the exchange for human women, they gave knowledge unto men, and knowledge is something that man has always sought since the Garden of Eden, and it's no different today. So I mean, I can fully believe that the US and possibly other governments have non-human technology, not extraterrestrials from a different planet, but through occult practices, being in contact with more advanced beings, far more advanced beings who are able to sort of manipulate matter. They know, for example, like the pyramids, you mentioned the pyramids and how things were lifted. They would have probably used sound, like acoustic levitation, sound resonance, all these types of things, which is a, I mean, you can even look on YouTube and there's videos demonstrating sound resonance and things like that. Last couple of sort of questions. What do you think happened to the people then on board?
Well, one thing I really want to mention real quick is that, yeah, from a alien's perspective, whatever, I'm just totally indifferent. I just don't really care, right? Like, if aliens exist and are visiting us, it makes no difference to my life whatsoever. I know that a lot of people are, that's what all people want to know about is the crashes and the retrievals and the aliens. And I'm just going, I don't care about clapping alien cheeks or any of this stuff. I just want to know about the technology that can change our whole planet for the better, right? So that stuff doesn't really bother me either way out there. In terms of like what happened to the people, again, it's really hard to say. Now, if that Philip Wood EXIF data picture is correct, then at least some of the people potentially survived. But if I were to have to guess, I would say that people probably didn't even make it to the point where that plane disappears. And then even after that, I'm not really sure. Now, there is humanly traversable wormholes. Just in like very modern physics from 2020 to 2023, there have been papers that say humanly traversable wormholes are possible, meaning you're not going to get like ripped to shreds by going through them. Quantum entanglement in even just the last few weeks, they've been doing experiments on potentially teleporting pictures where when you move the entire picture through the quantum entanglement, it doesn't get distorted, it doesn't get kind of shifted or rearranged or scattered. Which presents the idea of like you're not going to come out as like bizarro you. You might still be you when you go through the wormhole. So I think it is theoretically possible for some people to survived. What I used to say in the early podcasts when I went down this road and I was all about them saving the people was, you would make backroom deals with China and say, here, we're going to give your people back, but you can't ever let them talk again, right? Which for China, it's probably pretty damn simple, right? They have complete control over their media, but come to learn the United States government has complete control over the media as well. If somebody like Philip Wood, the American passenger, lives, like the Western passengers are the ones you got to silence and you make them all sign NDAs and non-disclosure agreements. But for someone like Philip Wood, you'd have to put them in witness protection. Like it's, you're never going to see your family again type situation, right? From talking to some of the people like the Alien Addict podcast, which is a fun podcast that I've been hanging out with quite a few times, they say they're a little more dark and they say, well, you give them the special pancakes that makes you not wake up ever again. Or you put something in their water bottle, right, and say, here, drink some water, and then that's the end. Not really sure, to be honest with you. But I don't want to give any of the families of the victims any false hope. It does not look good for the most part. And what I'll say too is that none of the families, not a single one, has ever reached out to me. I've been investigating this for almost 6 months and nobody has reached out to me regarding this, which is odd because if you actually go look at a lot of the old press conferences, the CNN interviews, none of the family members believed the official story. I was pretty surprised, like none of them did. They were like screaming at them, some of them getting arrested. The ones going on CNN are just outright saying they think the plane got taken. This is when they're already speculating about this suicide narrative. They're going, nope, the plane got taken. I'm just like, whoa, that's on CNN. I'm like, okay, so that's what's weird is that if my family had disappeared, doesn't matter if 10 years go by or 20 years go by. If somebody's going out there, I'm going, I got two videos implicating the US government and taking the plane, I'm going to be reaching out to them, even if it seems, pretty far out there, right? And so it's kind of odd that they have it. But I've come to learn as well that many of them did sign settlements and they didn't get very much money either. On average, they seem to have got about $30,000 each, or about $80,000 total between the first initial non-contingent payment and the payments that they got from the lawsuits. And that's because they were all tried in Malaysia and China, where you don't have the same kind of liability that you would have in the United States, where if it were tried in the United States here, they potentially would got millions each.
One
It's a
of the
tough
things
situation.
that,
Go ahead.
yeah, one of the things I've been thinking of about like how they would use the technology, and it's quite frightening, really, if they're teleporting things. It's like, because in the back of my mind, I'm thinking they don't generally develop technology that's going to benefit us. They're generally developing technology to destroy their enemies. And it's like, are they trying to teleport nukes onto like Russia? Because obviously, if the US was to fire a nuke, Russia would detect it. They're firing one back. But if you can teleport that onto them, and I just hope that's not what they've got in mind, because that'd be
Yeah,
really
the warp
just.
nukes, actually, it was Star Captain Dread on Twitter was the first person I was in a space with, and I actually proposed this exact thing, and he went warp nukes, and I love the idea of that, right? Because it's essentially we're talking about an unstoppable weapon, right? You
Yeah,
teleport a nuke onto
absolutely.
somebody and that's it. From talking to Bob Greenier, it's actually the perfect defense as well, is that these orbs could theoretically make a nuke inert or annihilate a nuke as well that's being shot at you via conventional means. But so absolutely, I think that the logical implication of this type of technology is military purposes, weapons, defense, etc. And this is why it would be, this is potentially one of the biggest conspiracies ever, is not just taking the plane, but the technology that's being hidden, right? And you think about, okay, why would you hide it? And this would be stuff that they can't let come out no matter what, because this is whoever controls this controls the whole entire planet. This is your trump card that's out there. But at this point, it's been 10 years. And one of the recent things, Amy Eskridge, she ended up, she died a couple of years ago. She was an anti-gravity researcher as well. Seems like a lot of these researchers have bad things happen to them in general. But she was saying that if the people that she had been talking to, they're going to let you do it. If they don't stop you, they're going to let you do it. And it feels like that's what's going on with me right now. Why are they not stopping me? Why are they not threatening me? Why are they not calling me? Well, probably there's factions out there, some of them that want it out, some of them that want to keep it hidden, right? Everybody's got their own agendas. Well, if they're not out there overtly stopping me, then it's kind of like a tacit approval, right? Or approval of getting the information out there, which tells me as well that Russia and China have probably figured it out already, right? These videos have been out there for 10 years. If I'm able to figure out these videos are real and that this technology is real, then I sure hope their intelligence agencies can figure it out, because I'm just one dude with some volunteers helping out, right? On a Discord server. They've got huge amounts of resources that should be able to figure out this stuff's real and then reverse engineer it. And if they haven't been able to figure that out, then they're just completely obsolete, you know? So that could be part of the reason why, you know, maybe enough time has gone by that people, they've said, well, we're just going to let this come out. There could also be this idea that this is an investigation that there's really has never been done before. It's a crowdsourced investigation. It began on social media that, you know, it's got this kind of this swell of people and this grassroots movement almost of people that are behind it. Some people are in the UFO community. I've got people that are you know, in the conspiracy community, as well as just open-minded people that are behind it. And that's a really hard thing to stop, right? You can't just cut off the head in that situation because, you know, 10 more people will just take my place if that were the case. And if I were to go missing or something like that, it would be super suspicious, right? So I don't know what they do. You know, I think that we've presented them a big challenge from the intelligence community perspective, assuming these videos are real.
Yeah, just I mean, I just want more and more people to hear what you've got to say, and obviously that's my motivation for doing this. But just sort of to wrap up then, what would satisfy you in order for you to bring your investigation to a close?
Yeah, and I think that what I'll say here too is I haven't been doing this for money or anything like that. I haven't sold a single thing related to this. I haven't been writing a book or anything at all related to that. But you know, maybe in the future, if that were an avenue to get the information out there, because that's all I'm trying to do. That's why I'm doing all these podcasts, is try to get the information out there, let people come to their own decisions. But what I'd like is, in terms of a goal, is to get a statement from the U.S. government. I filed this with the AARO, which is the All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office. Essentially, the United States government's, UFO research people. I talked to one of the people there. They asked me not to get name them, but kind of gave them the whole rundown of it and told them there's a lot of verifiable information here. Like, is that their MQ-1C Gray Eagle drone taking that video? Because if that's what that video looks like, boom, validation. Is that their cyber system with sentient that we're looking at in the other one? Because if that's what that looks like and that's their real system, then boom, the videos are real, right? Like no one outside the government could even know that exists. No one even knew before this investigation that satellite video like that even did exist. And so all they have to do is go to the NRO, go to the NGA, that's the National Reconnaissance Office, National Geospace Aerospace Office, go to the Navy and confirm that kind of stuff, or go to the person who we think leaked the videos, who went to prison, and find out is this what they went to prison for? Like any of this stuff will just prove the videos to be real, straight up. So what I want is I want the DOD, the government, the Pentagon to issue a statement about the videos, because I have a feeling that, people say, well, the government lies, but when you look at like the stuff around the case here, they didn't lie directly. They just issued vague statements, right? It's not like they directly deny the stuff. So my opinion is that there's a huge amount of liability if they were to send a spokesperson out to lie about the situation, right? Because if it ever gets confirmed to be true later on, then that's a huge amount of legal liability. So what they would have to do is they would either have to affirm it, which, let's be honest, they're not going to come out and say, yep, that's it. We disappeared the MH370. Too much liability, too many people's lives on the stake. But they might be able to come out and say, oh, we can't confirm or deny that. Even a statement like that would be huge, right? Because most people are going to look at that and go, well, you should have been able to deny it if that's a fake video that somebody hoaxed, right? If some amateur VFX artist made these, then you would just say that, right? And I think that that's quite telling too, is that they haven't made any statements because I think we've had hundreds of millions of impressions on these videos. So pretending like the US government doesn't know that this is out there is absurd. They know. 100% they know. All the big media stations know. None of them have reached out to me. So at this point, all we need to do is put on enough pressure to force a statement out of them, and then we'll get a resolution. If they can come out and say, oh, we made these videos for some psyop that we planned on using, great. Well, we'll be able to match that up against the evidence to see if that's true or not, right? At the end of the day, we didn't find any airplane in the South Indian Ocean. And until we do, this story and case is not going away. And it's my opinion that they'll never find a plane ever, because if they were to find the black boxes, they would be able to, the black boxes on them are going to say that this plane didn't fly in the South Indian Ocean. It's going to not line up at all with these narratives that are out there. And that's the reason why they can't find it. Because otherwise, what you would do is you would just, even after you took the plane, you would just go land it somewhere in the South Indian Ocean afterwards, right? So that they could find the plane later on. But that's the reason why you can't, because the black boxes will tell the truth.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to find it either. And I'd totally get what you were saying about confirmation. Well, they won't confirm or deny either the freedom of information request regarding a former prime minister who allegedly was a spy for German intelligence, and that's the reason we ended up going into the EEC, which became the EU, and it's now obviously we came out of the EU. So my freedom of information request was regarding that, and after delaying me and requesting more time, they come back with we can't confirm or deny. Well, clearly then it's true. And that's the thing, isn't it? If it wasn't true, whatever you've asked, they'd just deny it.
Yeah,
But I
so then let
mean,
me speak on that real
well.
quick, because I've issued a ton of FOIAs to the US government. Almost every agency I've FOIA'd, every single one's been rejected. The NRO, I asked for stuff about the satellite information about MH370. They gave me a technical rejection, like you said. Oh, it's going to take more than 20 days. Well, it's like 4 months later, and I've heard nothing back. The other ones, like Edward C. Lin is the guy we think went to prison over leaking these. Like the time frame for his deployment on these special secret spy planes is like 1 month, the same month the plane went missing. And he went to prison. He got a 9-year sentence after a plea deal, which plea deals mean usually you get a discounted sentence. 9 years is a huge amount of time. The
Pretty
FOIAs into
long, yeah.
him rejected in total. They reject them in the interest of national defense or foreign policy. This is the exact same exemption they used when O'Reilly Tates put in one to the NSA, the National Security Agency, about MH370 back in 2014. Everything into MH370, the United States gets met with the same Obama-era exemption to be kept secret in the interest of national defense or foreign policy. What? First of all, why are they all the exact same exemption for for all these people that we think are related to the plane? And why is there anything being held back about the plane if supposedly the U.S. government didn't have anything to do with it, right? Yeah. This investigation has shown the United States government knows 100% what happened to this plane, and they're lying about it. So why, right? The answer is those videos. Because they got some crazy advanced technology they don't want people to know about. That's just my
100%.
Opinion.
Yeah, no, they've shot themselves in the foot with the way they've reacted to it all. And, you know, the videos do tell the story as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I'm not an expert. I'd have never worked on a film, but I know, you've mentioned before, you've had an expert and they've seen them. And I just encourage people to obviously look at them videos who have not possibly seen them. So just before we go, Ashton, and you could stay on just for a minute after we go as well, just tell people again where they can sort of get hold of your Twitter and everything.
Yeah, so on Twitter, it's at JustXAshton, JustXAshton. This is also my YouTube handle, at JustXAshton. On my YouTube, you can find the videos. I've actually uploaded them there. I've never got copyright striked. So if somebody made these, they don't care that other people are supposedly like profiting off them or whatever. That was actually just a little bit of a test to see if that would even happen. You can also find several explainer videos that I've done that go over the flight path, go over the satellite capabilities and all of that as well. I think it's all very compelling. You can also watch my live streams where we do a lot of stuff. We do some fun stuff, you know, making fun of some of the critics. We do stuff like memes. We dig hard into the science and learning electrical engineering and physics, as well as you can watch some of the investigation play out as well. So you can come watch it all in real time. I think that the biggest thing for me is being as transparent as possible, so that people realize that I'm not, you know, one of these disinformation agents that's, you know, the Project Blue Beams and the slow drip disclosure. I'm just a regular dude with no NDA who's found and been advocating for what I think are two of the most incredible videos ever.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would encourage people to follow Ashton on Twitter. And there's a community on there he's created, which I'm on, MH370X. Get on there as well. Look into all the research he's done. Thanks for your time, Ashton. It's been fascinating. I was looking forward to it for a while, this, you know, and I'll continue to be following you and looking into, you know, all your updates and everything. So, guys, that's it for this episode. Hope you've enjoyed it. It's a fascinating topic. I'll be back next week with another guest. I'm Paul, and this is Beyond the Paradigm.
Am I crazy? We don't use that word in here.